from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont. Online at WVHTF.org.
And you don't realize how valuable it is until you lose it. And from our region, no one thought losing that would have left without.
If this memorandum of
Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. With Republicans at the helm this legislative session, almost every member is learning to chair a committee for the first time, setting both its rules and agenda, balancing staffers, lawmakers, and lobbyists. Over the next 2 weeks, we'll spend time meeting those new committee chairs. We begin this evening with the chairs of the Judiciary Committees. Senator Charles Trump is an attorney from Morgan County. He's returning to the legislature after serving many years in the House of Delegates, where he was the minority leader. Delegate John Schott is an attorney from Mercer County. He was first elected to the House in 2008, was appointed to the Senate in 2010, and was reelected to the House of Delegates in 2012. Gentlemen, thank you both for being here this evening. Let's start with a bill that brought House Speaker Tim Armstead down from the podium to address the members this morning, and that bill is one that passed through the Senate on Friday pretty quickly. Senator, you spoke about that bill. It was one transferring work permits with the approval of the DEP for drilling sites in the northern part of the state. You said that that bill needed to pass because it was urgent. It was urgent for those workers to begin working on those drilling sites. So what's your reaction to the Speaker's decision to push it through the committee process?
Oh, well, I think that's the prerogative of the Speaker of the House and the members of the House of Delegates. I have actually no thought or comment on that. We examined the bill very, very carefully in the Senate, in the Senate Judiciary Committee, and so we had it a little bit ahead of the House. And if they want to refer it to committee, it was referred to committee in the Senate. So that makes sense to me.
Delegate, the right move?
Makes sense to me. We've just single referenced it to energy on the House side and expect the Energy Committee to take it up very soon.
Okay. Let's move on to a bill, Delegate Schott, one of your bills that you introduced, House Bill 2028. It prohibits state employees and their immediate family members from entering into contracts with the state. It's a purchasing bill. Can you explain it to us a little bit, and why do we need this bill?
Sure. Well, keep in mind the approach of the leadership on both the House and the Senate side is to remake the image of West Virginia. There are a lot of components of that. One of those is the perception that the state government is sort of a good old boy network. And as part of our process is to examine the various legislation that's already on the books and look for gaps that might undermine that type of perception. And this bill basically was directed, and it's evolved since it's been going through the committee process, to legislators and to prevent them from actually entering into any type of contracts or immediate members of their family with the legislature or with any other agency. The bill in its current form basically has sort of two thresholds. One, there's an absolute prohibition against entering into any type of contract with the agency for which you are associated. So in other words, a legislator couldn't enter into a contract to provide some kind of services to the legislature, the House, or the Senate. There's a second section right now that would prevent that individual as well as their family members from entering into any other contracts over $25,000. During the process of reviewing that in the committee, there were a number of concerns raised, and we've referred that to a working group to develop it further, try to identify concerns that people have and see if we can address those concerns and perfect the bill and bring it back to the committee for action.
Is it just a perception that there's this good old boy network in West Virginia, or is it a reality?
Well, I can't give you any specific examples, but I think if you read the newspaper, you've seen examples in various parts of the state where there's been some some legal action involving public officials, and we just want to make sure that that you know we can tighten that up and hopefully prevent that kind of situation arising with the House or the Senate or any other governmental agencies.
Let's move on to a couple of the election bills that you all are taking up. Both committees, both judiciary committees today took up a bill that would mandate nonpartisan election of judges and magistrates. Senator, let's start with you in the discussion in your committee this afternoon.
We had a great lively discussion on the bill today. It was our first opportunity to look at it in committee, and the committee considered some amendments. I'm a proponent of the measure, Ashton. I believe it's something that's really important to do for West Virginia and our future. And I believe that while I acknowledge we have throughout West Virginia many fine people, men and women, working at all levels in our judicial branch of our government as judges, clerks, justices, magistrates. I think that we are lucky in that we have such a fine judiciary, and we really do, for the most part. We have, you know, there are always some exceptions, but the vast majority of the time our judicial officers get it right, and they work very hard to do so. And I think we're lucky that we've had that in spite of what I consider to be a flawed system. We have, West Virginia is one of only a handful of states in the whole country that elect their judicial officers on a partisan ballot. And I believe very strongly that we've got to get away from that. We have to protect our judicial candidates from the melee of partisan politics because I think it makes it difficult for them to fulfill their ideals of impartiality. As I say, I think we have good judicial officers in this state in spite of the flaws within the system. But I would like to see us move to a nonpartisan election of judicial officers because I don't believe that whether a person is a Republican or a Democrat really tells the voters anything about that person's qualities to be a good judge.
Delegate, where does the bill stand in the House?
We also took up the bill in the Judiciary Committee today, and when I say the bill, I'm sure there's some differences between the bills. Each committee has their own counsel, and they look at it, and I'm sure they see things differently sometimes. But we've opened the floor for a debate today. We had a number of witnesses. I think we had three or four different witnesses to answer technical questions of our committee. We have not finished considering the bill, and we'll resume on Wednesday. Wednesday morning to continue with the questioning and the debate.
There's a justice on our state Supreme Court right now, a Republican, who was elected in the most previous judicial election, Supreme Court election, on public campaign financing. That's a pilot program that was recently extended by the legislature. Is there, and this is a question for either of you, is there any backing, has there been any thought to extending that program to other judicial officers or even mandating that program?
I'll go quickly. I haven't heard, Ashton, in the Senate any discussion of the extension of that to other judicial offices. There has been discussion about the continuation of it and the funding of it for the Office of Supreme Court Justice, but I haven't heard discussion about applying it to other offices.
Okay. There is a bill that was introduced in the House this week by your vice chair, Patrick Lane, on limiting the times that lawmakers can fundraise around legislative sessions or around interim sessions. I realize it's still early in the process of that bill, but you all plan to run it?
What we're doing in the House Judiciary Committee, we have organized some working groups because of the volume of bills that we get. And often, if it's not clear-cut that a bill needs to be debated by the entire committee, we refer it to a working group. And we have a working group that's looking at all the election laws at this time with the idea of giving the feedback. And, of course, the chairman sets the agenda to see which, if any, of those bills we want to run. Or perhaps we can extract some components of each bill and combine them into a new bill. But that was one of the bills that's been referred to that working group. And thus far, I don't think they've had an opportunity to look at it.
Senator, we keep talking about how crucial tort reform is going to be this legislative session. Is there any one bill you see as sticking out above the others as one that needs to get through?
I think there are a lot of measures, as you've seen, that are already under examination. Delegate Schott, Chairman Schott, has taken some up in the House of Delegates. We've been looking at some others and actually have reported a few out of the Senate Judiciary Committee. As far as if your question is, you know, is there one that rises above the others as being most important or most critical, I would say no, not in my thinking anyway. There are a lot of issues to look at, and we're going to look at all of them carefully as time allows. I'm really excited about the work that's been done by our committee in the Senate so far. The Senate Judiciary Committee, in my judgment, after just a couple weeks, is a great committee. And Republicans and Democrats on that committee are rolling up their sleeves and really tackling the tough and important issues for West Virginia.
Delegate, there was a public hearing held in the House chamber last week about House Bill 2011. It deals with workers' compensation funds. Is there anything that came from that public hearing that makes you think the law may change form, or this piece of legislation that you're looking at may change shape as what you have in front of you?
I think there was a lot of misinformation that was disseminated in connection with that public hearing, because the bill in the form that it is in the House Judiciary Committee is simply an effort to clarify what is meant by actual knowledge in the bill. The bill is basically, the law is a rare exception to the workers' compensation immunity for an employer who deliberately exposes an employee to a dangerous situation knowing that it could cause great harm. And the way the cases have unfolded has basically extended that exception beyond what many people think the legislature intended. So the bill was basically not intended to change the law in the sense that it would eliminate that claim for injured workers, but basically to try to clarify what is meant by the kind of knowledge that an employer has to have. And I will say this, that as a result of that hearing and as a result of some concerns on both sides of the Capitol, there are people that are trying to work through issues and concerns that folks on both sides and all sides of that issue have, and hopefully they can come up with a resolution to address those.
So I think you're right. There has been some confusion over the bill. So to clarify, does the bill give CEOs immunity in those kind of cases?
Absolutely not. And in probably every situation that individuals described during the hearing, those situations and the outcomes of those situations wouldn't have changed if this bill in the current form that it's in would have been adopted.
Okay. Senator, briefly, what issues are you all looking at this week in your committee?
As you mentioned, the nonpartisan election of judicial officers. Tomorrow on the Judiciary Committee's agenda will be a bill that addresses the Medical Professional Liability Act. We have tentatively scheduled a bill for Wednesday to consider the elimination of straight ticket voting option in West Virginia.
Delegate, briefly, some of the bills you all will be looking at this week.
Well, in addition to completing our work with regard to the nonpartisan election of judges, we have a bill that came out of the Court Improvement Committee of the Supreme Court that rewrites a chapter in the Code, Chapter 49, which deals with child welfare issues, abuse and neglect. We'll spend a good bit of time on that bill because it's a substantial bill. We have a couple other bills that are sort of fillers, depending on how much time we have available. We think we're going to spend a good bit more time on the nonpartisan election of judges, and we will also spend a good bit of time on that Chapter 49 rewrite because it's such an important area of the law. As far as our Friday agenda, we really haven't set that yet. A lot will depend on what comes over from the Senate and what needs some action quickly in order to get it to the governor so he can consider it, and we'll have time to respond if the governor decides he might veto a bill that's important to our party.
Okay, well, we'll be following those bills throughout the session. Delegate John Schott, Senator Charles Trump, thank you both for your time today.
Ashton, thank you.
Thank you for the invitation.
In a moment, the state hasn't always had the best reputation for nurturing small businesses, but one House committee is working to change that. First, here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the Senate today. Thank you both so much.
Among the bills introduced in the Senate today, Senate Bill 303, the governor's bill to reduce the amount of sales tax proceeds dedicated to the School Major Improvement Fund by $2 million for the fiscal years 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019, and 2020, and to reduce the amount of sales tax proceeds dedicated to the School Construction Fund by $6 million for those same fiscal years. Senate Bill 304, to establish a statewide farmers market vendor permit, which currently changes from county to county. The bill states that an increase of West Virginia farm production to meet the state's in-season demand for fresh fruit and vegetables would create over 1,700 jobs and add over $100 million to the state's economy. Senate Bill 306, to create an intermediate court of appeals. The bill creates two courts, one in the Northern District and one for the Southern District, with three judges in each. Senate Bill 307, to create the Paycheck Protection Act. The bill establishes acts prohibited by a public employer and a labor organization. Senate Bill 312, to set a deadline by which candidates or their financial agents must file financial statements in order to avoid being disqualified as a nominee for the general election. Up for passage in the Senate tomorrow, Senate Bill 13, relating to personal injury cases. The bill permanently reinstates the open and obvious doctrine for premises liability law, which has been the law of West Virginia for more than 100 years, and overrules the decision of the Supreme Court of Appeals of West Virginia in the case of Hirsch versus E.T. Enterprises in November 2013. And House Bill 2001, to repeal portions of the Alternative and Renewable Energy Portfolio Act. On second reading, Senate Bill 8, to provide for a performance efficiency audit of the Division of Highways. The audit shall examine areas of inefficiency, better practices, better allocations of funds, unused funds, methods of saving money, appropriate number of employees, and the best use of taxpayer dollars.
Senators approved Senate Bill 43 today, altering the statute of limitations on when a third party can join a lawsuit. The bill would give parties 180 days from the time the suit is served to join as a defendant. There's no current limit in state code. One senator also stood to address a situation in his district, not unlike one lawmakers and residents of the Charleston area were experiencing a little over a year ago. Senator Ron Miller of Greenbrier County stood on the Senate floor to tell his fellow senators about an accident over the weekend, leaving thousands of people in his area without potable water. On Friday evening, a tanker truck wrecked into a tributary of the Greenbrier River, leaking 4,000 gallons of diesel fuel and shutting down the water treatment plant that supplies several cities, including Lewisburg. Miller says it will take a few days before the people in the area will once again be able to use tap water.
It's very, very important that we protect that viable resource, and you don't realize how valuable it is until you lose it. And in our region, no one have thought losing that with about 4,000 gallons of diesel fuel as it came down the river, shutting down Lewisburg's system, which shut down Lewisburg and Ronsert, Fairley, Frankfort, losing possibly the Alderson system, which shuts down the Alderson area, and maybe Talkett in Summers County. As of last night, they had water still in those places. So be aware of that, please, and any way that we can help.
Miller says the communities have not reached out for additional water supplies from other areas of the state, but schools are closed until the water system can be restored. Also in the Senate today, the Chamber's Agriculture Committee took up a bill that's long been debated by lawmakers. Senate Bill 237 would move the regulation of the deer farming industry from the Division of Natural Resources to the Department of Agriculture. Senator Daniel Hall is the committee's chair.
The Department of Agriculture is the best place for this deer farming industry to be regulated and be under. They have the knowledge and experience on how to regulate and to control and promote the livestock industry in West Virginia.
In a previous meeting, committee members made multiple technical changes to the bill, resulting in a committee substitute. It was approved by committee members unanimously and now moves to the Senate Finance Committee for further consideration. Senators also began discussing a rule to prohibit the ownership of dangerous wild animals. The State Department of Health and Human Resources requested fruit bats and a species of rat be added back to the list of prohibited pets because both are known to carry diseases like rabies, typhus, and Ebola. The The committee, however, ran out of time and will consider the rule at a later meeting. Owning a business is a dream many people have, but it's not always easy to start one up and keep it going. Delegates met last week to discuss the future of small businesses in the state. Liz McCormick reports.
In the House Small Business Entrepreneurship and Economic Development Committee meeting, legislators met to learn what the state is doing to help small, budding businesses succeed in West Virginia. A presentation was given by Christina Oliver, the state director for the West Virginia Small Business Development Center, and she discussed the biggest focus of the SBDC right now, business coaches.
Our coaches help companies implement successful business practices and strategies. The SBDC program does not give grants, loans, or free money. A business coach walks the journey with the business as a trusted advisor to help that business discover what it needs to do to become successful. This assistance is critical to help companies be aware of and prepare for properly capital access opportunities.
Oliver says small business is big business in West Virginia. She thinks small businesses are the wealth creators of the state. But to succeed, they need a business coach to help them get there. Oliver says the role of a business coach is to help the budding business avoid bad decisions, mitigate risks, and strategically make decisions for success. She also explained four key skills a business coach would bring to the table.
From the SBDC perspective, a skilled business coach has the following. And we have been building a network of skilled coaches. It's taken a while, and we have had times where we've been understaffed, and now we're building staff back up. But this is what we look for in a leader, in a business coach. Leadership skills, the ability to work with people. You don't tell people things, you work with them. Small business owners don't like to be told. They like to be worked with, alongside of. So leadership skills, business expertise, real, applicable business expertise that have them working with numbers and have credentials to prove that they can work with numbers and real-world experience understanding numbers so they can impart that to their clients. They need to have management processes skills, that structures and strategy. And at the end of the day, they need to have project management where you put it all into action.
Oliver says since she took the role of state director 5 years ago, the SBDC has helped nearly 4,800 clients. 400 new businesses get started, and about half of those businesses are still in business today. She says that clients of the SBDC have access to over $72 million in capital access if they are approved. But Delegate Tim Miley was concerned about some small businesses not knowing about the services offered. Oliver responded, saying what they really need is more people to help expand.
I'm out now, you know, marketing and letting people know about the services at the SBDC. We're in a better position now to actually assist.
Oliver hopes by the end of 2015, the SBDC will have 25 business coaches stationed across the state to help guide even more small businesses on the path to success. At the end of the meeting, Chairwoman Delegate Carol Miller was inspired to push the committee forward with a mission statement.
We've all heard the stories of people aren't helping us along with business. And I talked about maybe in our committee we could do a mission statement or a resolution that would strongly urge the cities, the counties, and the states to all get on the same page and work using our technology that is available, be it a portal or whatever. So I think we'll work toward having some type of resolution come out of the small business economic development entrepreneurship committee that we are strongly pushing towards making our state business friendly.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
Now here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the House today.
Among the bills introduced in the House today, over 80 bills authorizing promulgation of legislative rules submitted by state agencies for legislative approval. These regulation bills are introduced annually. One bill up for passage in the House tomorrow, House Bill 2002, to establish the comparative fault standard and abolish joint liability and implement several liability. Fault is expressed as a percentage, and in any action seeking damages for personal injury, property damage, or wrongful death, recovery shall be predicated upon principles of comparative fault, and the liability of each person who caused the damages shall be allocated to each person in direct proportion to that person's percentage of fault.
This has been the Legislature Today. Tomorrow, our guests will be former Senate President and former House Speaker, Senator Jeff Kessler and Delegate Tim Miley. They now find themselves leading the minority Democrats in the state legislature. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us. Good night.
Support for the Legislature Today is provided by the following.
The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont. Online at wvhtf.org.